You to know that normally this is a Rolls Royce operation here at St Margaret Lothbury, especially when I'm not doing anything. From John chapter 20 and beginning of verse 11 on page 1028, which is wonderfully up there. Now, John chapter 20 and verse 11. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They've taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they put him." At this she turned round and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, he said, "Sir, if you carried him away, tell me where you put him and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned towards him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I'm ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the good news. "I've seen the Lord," she told them. "And he said these things to her." "Do not hold on to me," the Lord Jesus is recorded as saying to Mary in verse 17. "Don't cling to me. Don't grip me like you might have done in the past," might be a better translation. And it seems initially a slightly insensitive thing to say in the light of Mary's astonishing faithfulness. She got up before dawn, as we saw last week and from verse 1, to weep at Jesus' tomb, soon as the Sabbath regulations allowed. And she found that the stone that covered the entrance had been removed and the body of Jesus simply wasn't there. In a panic, she'd rushed back and found Peter and John and returned with them to the tomb. They'd looked in and gone away. But Mary had stayed on after the other two had left. She was obviously devastated. This explains the tone she used, which comes out slightly in the English, with both the angels and the man she thought was the gardener. This wasn't the time for polite exchanges. She was desperate to find the body of Jesus. And people could either help her or not. If they could, she wanted their help. And if they couldn't, She wasn't interested. And then came that extraordinary moment when the Lord Jesus uttered her name. "Mary," he said. And she knew immediately who it was. We can easily imagine her wild shout of joy. But then comes this extraordinary drawing back on his point, this redefining of the relationship. "Don't keep holding me," he says to her almost sharply. It's difficult to understand given what happened in the other encounters that the Lord Jesus had. Why did he respond in this way to her, of all people? Just a few verses later, we find him inviting Thomas to touch him. In parallel encounters, or complementary encounters in Luke, and particularly in Luke 24, we see him saying to his terrified disciples, "Look at my hands and my feet and my side. I'm not a ghost, I'm a real man. Just touch me and see." So why was he so insensitive to this faithful, extraordinary woman? And I think it is that if she was to continue being as effective as she had been, as committed to him as she had been, She needed to accept things couldn't be as they had been, but needed to move on to something else. He was, as he explained her, going back to his father. And she was going to have to come to terms with that. Wouldn't be going again round the villages of Judea and Galilee. Not going to be discussing and talking and sharing meals and praying together. There was going to be a new way to express this relationship. Not one she'd known, one that would be better. There was going to be an intimacy that hadn't been there before, or a dynamism. I don't understand quite what, but it's going to be something so much better. He talks about my father and your father in verse 17, to my God and your God. Up until then, throughout all the Gospels, he may have used the personal pronoun about the Father and himself, but it had never been applied to them. It had always been the Father or God. She and his other close friends were going to now share the relationship which up until then had been entirely his own. It wasn't going to be the same. She mustn't want it to be the same. There's something so much better in store, and she's got to be determined to seek that. And with that came a new boldness. She, of all people, was going to tell the disciples what had happened. With her background, with the lack of legal status in first century Israel as a witness given, which was applied to a woman, she was to be the first witness of the resurrection, and Jesus calls her an apostle to the apostles. They're not going to believe you, he implies. They're probably going to ridicule you. But actually, you're going to be the first to tell them things are moving on. It's going to be new. Don't cling to the past, but go to the future. And Jesus looks at us and says, Mary's experience is our model. We're to begin to be those who are bolder than we have been, and not as hurt or put off by the ridicule that might come from when we talk about our faith. But with that comes the promise. Your experience of me is going to be different than ever before. And I, said Jesus, in my relationship with the Father, am going to be the model for what you're going to experience.